This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow, hoping you're all having a good Friday. You know, dinosaurs were around for hundreds of millions of years, and some of them, who started out as meat eaters, evolved into what today we call chickens, which don't naturally eat meat. So somewhere along the line, some of them made that switch. They developed bodies covered with feathers. They developed teeth suitable for grinding veggies rather than ripping flesh, and stomachs that could digest all of that foliage. But convincing evidence for dinosaurs that were sort of a crossover species has been hard to find. Until now, paleontologists have unearthed a new species of dinosaur near Green River, Utah, that might be this missing link. In fact, they found not just one dinosaur, but perhaps a whole flock of feathered dinosaurs, hundreds, perhaps, as I say, thousands, that appeared to have died in one spot en masse 125 million years ago. This finding is reported in the journal Nature. So what can this missing link tell paleontologists about the transition from meat eating to plant eating? And why did so many of them die at this one spot? That's among the questions we'll be asking this hour. If you'd like to join in, give us a number. Give us a call on our number, 1-800-989-8255. Let me introduce my guest. Jim Kirkland is the state paleontologist at the Utah Geological Survey. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Kirkland.
Glad to be back.
Describe what it looked like if it were alive today. What would we see?
Well, it's in many ways like your typical small meat-eating raptors from Jurassic Park. It didn't have the big sickle claw at its feet, and its body form was much more snaky. It had quite a long neck with a fairly small head on one end and a long tail, probably to balance the animal out. And it only stood a bit over 3 feet tall. Hmm. So it had a real snaky look to it.
But it did have some characteristic looks of a bird or a chicken or something like that.
Well, certainly when you look at its relatives, they were all feathered descendants and its ancestors as well. It's fully within the advanced bird-like feathered dinosaurs. And its descendants would look like giant geese in some ways. They have a long neck, small head with a little beak at the front that's lacking in this animal. And in some cases, these big, huge geese-like animals had three-foot-long claws on their hands, in the case of Therizinosaurus, and would have weighed as much as a large elephant.
Wow, that's some transitional animal that you have there. Why do you think it is this transitional animal possibly from the meat eater to the vegetarian?
Well, what we see in this animal are very few adaptions for plant eating, but they're the critical ones. We see the reduction in size of teeth from nice blade-like serrated teeth. Reduction in the size of teeth so that they're nearly double as many in the jaws, but they're really tiny, and they're somewhat leaf-shaped, so they have a constricted root and a little flat blade-like crown. We see teeth like this in our modern lizard, the iguana, which is a good herbivorous lizard. We see this repeated in all the groups of reptilian animals that become secondarily plant-eating, as has all terrestrial vertebrates that eat plants. It's all secondary.
Mm-hmm. And as you say, this is similar to other dinosaurs that have been found around the world.
Yeah, it's very similar to what you would expect for a typical Silurosaurian dinosaur. They typically have large brains, as present in our animal, very lightly built skeletons, full of air sacs down the vertebral column, hollow limb bones, raptorial claws on the hands, big hands that could palm a basketball, thing that could rip your face off if you disturbed it too much. Other than the teeth and the slightly wider pelvis, you would be very happy calling this a typical medium-sized meat-eating animal.
Was this unique then to North America, where it's been found?
Well, the species is certainly unique. We have two sites about a kilometer apart suggesting mass mortalities happened here more than once. But we have no knowledge of this animal anywhere before. A few years ago, I had the good fortune of describing the first Therizinosaur from North America. This is a group that's much better known from Asia. And actually, thanks to the Discovery Channel, we made kind of a big play when we announced that. And I was able to call on them to fund this for the last few years for the excavations of this site. But this will be one of the very best-known Manta raptorans, even including the fabulous material from China, because we're going to have so much material as we continue to excavate the site.
Well, let's talk about that China connection. Is there an implication that maybe they were common? You know, the continents don't look like they do today, back 125 million years ago.
Yeah, not at all. When we found the first one, we were in rocks of about 90 million years ago. That wasn't a big problem. We had the Alaskan land bridge. Animals could come into Western North America, and we're very comfortable that they did regularly and back and forth. However, at 125 million years ago, what would become Alaska, at least the bulk of it, was an island floating northward across the North Pacific for its eventual collision about 100 million years ago. With Western Canada to give us that land bridge. So at this point, the only migration route we would have to connect China with Western North America is through Northern Europe. The Atlantic Ocean wasn't fully open, and we already see the dinosaurs at this time that we've described in Utah are very similar to the ones known from Southern Britain on the Isle of Wight.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that so many of them, was I correct in describing hundreds, possibly thousands?
Perhaps thousands.
Really?
You know, when we start estimating how many bones per square meter we have and the acreage the site covers, we could end up with well over a million bones, which is an extraordinary number, and I won't live to see that.
And it was just a mass die-out for something they drank at the site, or something covered them, or why?
Yeah, something probably killed them. In fact, the large numbers of these animals is another clue to herbivory, since you don't support vast numbers of carnivores in any one habitat. But you certainly can support vast numbers of herbivores. And probably they were killed off. It was an attritional site. We would expect a greater diversity. You know, perhaps drought. We still expect during a drought, the spring would attract a lot of different animals. So we'd expect a greater diversity. I think something special might have happened. Since we think it may be related to spring deposits, perhaps something like botulism or another organic toxin produced by microbiotic imbalance within the spring system could have poisoned these animals. And this happens all the time with modern bird populations.
Yeah.
Kill off thousands of geese overnight in a game refuge. It's not unusual.
Is it okay to call dinosaurs with birds a flock?
Yeah, it's as good a name as any.
with feathers,
we like
I mean?
To call tyrannosaur groups, I think they call those a tyrant of tyrannosaurs now.
Well, now that we think of them as birds and they have feathers, a flock would work for me. But I'll
flock works great for this group particularly because they're well-feathered.
Well, and tell us about, is it true I heard that you were led to this site by a fossil thief? Is that right?
Yeah, and you know, certainly you know, some of my colleagues would say hang them high. Many, in fact. But the fellow was out looking. He's from a family that's been prospecting, you know, tied to the uranium industry, other extractive parts of geology for many years, a couple generations at least. And he was out looking for a type of petrified wood that's made into jewelry in this area that his dad is actually pretty famous for, called Yellow Cat Redwood. And he stumbled on some toe bones, followed them up, and realized he had a bonanza. In fact, there were enough claws on the ground. If you're interested in this stuff for the money, you could say, "Oh, the ground was just littered with $100 bills."
Wow!
And you know, it's very understandable with that mindset. But this guy wasn't looking at it totally there. He was very interested in the site, and he was actually trying to gather up enough material to mount his own skeleton. And when he began to realize he might be getting in a bit over his head in terms of some of the fragility of some of the materials, though he had sold quite a bit of his duplicates. He decided he should turn it over. And he also knew there was a lot of heat in terms of investigations that were ongoing about where this stuff was coming from on the black market. But as he told me, he was willing to take his lumps. And as I told him, you know, if I'm asked how I got the site, and there's a good chance I will be, I'm going to have to fully disclose it. So it was... he ended up serving 5 months and having a very substantial fine, but he's still wanting to volunteer at the site now that he's paid his dues, and we've told him he's welcome to do that.
There's nothing like a reformed sinner.
Yeah.
What makes Utah, I mean, and this spot so rich for all these fossils?
Well, we've the good fortune that if you look down toward our border with Arizona, across what's now the Grand Canyon, cutting up across Las Vegas, there was a large rift system, kind of like the East African rift forming. So sediments were being shut off to the north in the rift shoulder. And then across the central part of the state, going down to Las Vegas as well, there was a series of large mountain ranges that were uplifted periodically, shedding sediment to the east, creating this huge V-shaped depositional basin region that we kind of refer to as the Grand Canyon Bight. And it existed for the entire Mesozoic with different rates of deposition. And subsequent to that, we uplift the Colorado Plateau, our famous canyon and mesa country of the American Southwest, exposing these rocks. So the combination of mountain ranges shedding sediment in and subsequent uplift give us the most complete section of terrestrial Mesozoic any one spot on the entire planet.
Wow. And one last question about this dinosaur. Do we know if it was an omnivore, that it could eat meat and also some veggies?
Well, I've been trying to make clear to a lot of people, because that's your first thought, it's a
Yeah.
transitionary form. But if you look at the teeth and jaws, there's not a chance it could bite a steak, but it certainly could swallow a lizard or two. It has something that's not reported widely, probably the largest olfactory bulb in its brain I've ever seen for a dinosaur. Bigger than T-Rex, bigger than Egyptian
Great
vultures.
sense of smell, huh?
Great sense of smell. You know, who knows? Maybe this thing actually scavenged some dead carcasses on occasion, but it has an amazing sense of smell, apparently.
Wow, so it could, if it came across something it could chew on, it would do that, or if not, it would go.
Yeah, I couldn't cut any fresh meat. This thing,
Yeah.
you throw a carcass in front of it, it could just stare at it. It could swallow something whole, or perhaps if something was pretty decomposed.
Right. So where do you go from here? Can we see these on exhibit anywhere?
Well, currently they're downstairs here at our Department of Natural Resources. But starting in June, the mounted skeleton will be on exhibit at the Utah Museum of Natural History here on in Salt Lake on the campus of the University of Utah.
All right. Well, we're going to go out and take a look. Thank you very much for taking time to talk with us.
Very welcome.
You're welcome. Jim Kirkland is a state paleontologist at Utah Geological Survey. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, fossils from another form, fossil fuels. Why are we using so much of them? How do we do away with them? And maybe the answer is energy conservation, because the oil's running out, too much global warming. Maybe energy conservation will join the energy conversation. So stay with us. We'll try to converse about it after this break.